Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is actually the ultimate psychotherapy, which is not the topic that we were planning. Dr. Richard Bandler, unfortunately, can't be with us. We're going to have him back in November. But we are going to be talking about something I call the ultimate psychotherapy. And we're going to be talking about it with you, and we're going to be offering you coaching on having what you want and creating insights and results in any area of your life. So the numbers to call to get on the show, 866-254-1579, toll-free from the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Or you can reach the show from outside the U.S. on 001-760-918-4300. And before I go to the phones, as always, I like to set the table a little bit. I just came back from London last night, and I was talking with my friend Robert Holden. Those of you who know Robert, he's got a show on Hay House Radio. He's been on Oprah a number of times. He's a wonderful speaker, a great writer. And during the course of our conversations, and our conversations go everywhere, we talk about positive psychology, and we talk about whether the Bordeaux region of France produces better wines than the Burgundy region. We talk about the true meaning of enlightenment and golf a lot. And I remember I was playing golf with Robert one day, and he was standing there being all Robert-like. And those of you who know Robert, it's all elegant and cool. And just before he drove a golf ball like 240 yards down the center of the fairway, he turned to me and he said, "You know, the ultimate psychotherapy is simply to relax about things." Now, he said it as just a passing comment, and I wound up writing about it, and it hummed along inside my mind for a long time, because it was such a nice way of describing an experience that I have with my own clients, which is that the moment that you relax about what's going on in your head, the moment that you relax about what's going on in your life, things start to change for the better. Your mood lifts. You begin to enjoy yourself. You begin to enjoy your work, begin to enjoy your friends and your partner. And before long, you begin having insights, a stream of insights into whatever it was that was bothering you in the first place. And the opposite is also true. It's almost as though, the more weight and gravitas we bring to bear on something, the harder it is for us to hear our own wisdom in relation to it. So the more lightness of touch you're willing to allow, the more easily and naturally things will begin to shift, seemingly all by themselves. And for me, one of the most profound examples of that in my own life was when I was dealing with the suicide thought. Those of you who know my story know that, you know, when I was in college and in high school, I was a depressed, suicidal kid. And there was a bizarre paradox where I went to university that insisted that as I had confessed, and I use that word with air quotes around it, but as I'd confessed to suicidal thoughts, I had to have mandatory psychotherapy if I wanted to stay enrolled in the school. But if I actually spoke about having suicidal thoughts during the therapy, they were duty-bound to report me to the powers that be, and I would be automatically expelled. Now, this led to a fair amount of talking about nothing, and I got wound up quite tightly about this. And as we danced around what was going on without ever once going to the heart of the matter, because I felt I wasn't allowed to talk about it. And I sort of worked my way through the school's team of psychotherapists one by one. You know, I wasn't very nice to them, in fairness. I remember I used to order pizza to arrive during our sessions in one case, and they felt I wasn't taking it seriously, and it's because I wasn't. But one doctor did something that really helped me. And what she told me was that to her ears, I sounded absolutely fine. And that it was quite normal for people to think about suicide from time to time, just as they thought about other things. And she pointed out to me that there is a huge distinction between thinking about suicide and actually wanting to kill yourself. And I somehow heard that. And for the first time in nearly 6 years, I began to relax about the whole thing. Because up until that point, everyone, including me, had so been so frightened about the content of my thinking that none of us, myself included, had noticed that the only problem was, and in fact, the only problem I actually had in my life at that point, was the fact that I thought, and I didn't understand that it was my own thinking that was scaring me. And a few days later, I had an insight which just confirmed that for me in an extremely visceral way. And once I saw it, and this is how I wrote about it, and you can have what you want. From that day forward, I had my insight, rather than continuing to treat the suicide thought as a problem to be solved, I recognized it for what it was, just a thought. No more significant than chicken or beef platter stripes or, I wonder what she's wearing under that. Which I will point out, I was 19. I never think that now. But see, what on reflection, I can see that what happened is I'd benefited from the ultimate psychotherapy. I'd been given permission to just relax about my problems instead of driving myself crazy trying to solve them. And this is so often the case. The moment you allow yourself to relax, your wisdom will bubble up to the surface. Your problem will dissolve in the light of your own insight. And life just gets easier from there. So we're going to take your calls on having what you want in any area of your life. And the numbers to call again, 866-254-1579, toll free from the United States and Canada. And from outside the U.S., you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. And let's begin in Brooklyn with Jamel. Jamel, welcome to the show. Nice to hear from you again. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Yeah, it's good to call again. I guess for me, I'm calling in again about... I guess one of the subjects I always talk about, my mother. She recently had a heart situation where they had did some surgery on her heart, and they put a pacemaker in there. And I don't know, I guess a lot of fear came up because she started getting anxious, and I started getting anxious. And she's coming home tomorrow. And we talked about this before, about the sort of feelings I get, and you sort of helped me. You did help me with how to visualize feelings that I had that's not associated with her. But I guess I'm scared again, and I should say that I just got your Effortless Success at loan from the library, and mm-hmm. it's good, and I'm just sort of using it right now at the first tape, but I got it on loan, and I was calling today because I saw this topic with that man that you just said wasn't there today, and I said, okay, Michael's into this, and that man is the start of it. I was going to ask both of you, but I'll ask you if there's anything you can think of that might help me that I can use on a daily basis and home, like any kind of affirmation, anything you use to help.
Sure.
With.
Well, I mean, and I'll answer you my way, and I'm sure Richard would answer you in Richard's way, and you know, again, he'll be back on the show. He suddenly had to fly somewhere, but for me, the thing that makes the difference is understanding what fear is and where it comes from, because if we get into the content of our fears, we have an infinite number of things to talk about, because you can be scared of anything. I've met people who are scared of Jell-O. I mean, quite literally, they're terrified every time Jell-O jiggles. For you know, they get a little mini heart attack. I've been with people who are scared of raccoons, which, you know, if you're actually like faced with an angry rabid raccoon, makes sense. But you know, they won't go out at night just in case there's a raccoon. You know, I've met people. You really can be scared of anything. So if you try to treat what you're scared of, you're going to have trouble. You can also understand your fear by looking at, well, fear is purposeful. And there are really only two purposes to fear. Fear is there to keep you safe or to motivate you, to drive you forward. Now, the only problem with that is fear is a terrible way to keep yourself safe, because it actually shuts you down. It actually shuts down part of your brain that you could actually use to work through things. I mean, it's a great way to stay safe if you're being chased by a tiger. Admittedly, it still works well for that. But it's just, it's ineffective. And it's a terrible way to motivate yourself over time, because it actually burns you out. You know, that's why people get burnout, is because they're continually running away from some imaginary monster in their heads. So ultimately, for me, the way I like to address fear is to look at what it actually is. And all fear is a scary thought in our heads that looks somehow like it has some validity in the real world. So if I were to show you a scary movie about aliens from outer space zapping pigs, because the pig is the mortal enemy of the Martian, I don't know if you know that, I'm going to guess that wouldn't particularly keep you up at night. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if they were really big pigs. No, it just isn't, because we can look at that and we can go, well, that's nothing to do with real life. But somehow, if instead I show you a picture of your mother being ill and there being complications, suddenly that doesn't seem like just a thought. That seems like, but that's real. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that her being ill, if she was, if you know, I can deal with that. I can deal with that. But just, I guess the emotion that we're both ill, or some, if that makes sense, that we're both sick together. Because when she's sick, I feel like I'm sort of joint at the hip, and it's the way that she makes it.
But here's the thing that your mom's got going for you, you've got going for you, I've got going for me, everyone listening has going for them, is that life begets life. The direction of life is towards life. It's towards health. It's towards growth. You ever seen one of those post-apocalyptic movies, and there's always a shot in every one where, like, the world is desolate, and then there's this one shot of this one, like, little shoot of green something coming up through the concrete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the nature of life.
Yeah.
Now, all we can do is we can create an environment that fosters that natural direction towards health and well-being, mm-hmm. or one that makes it harder. Life is going to fight for itself either way. And the thing about scaring yourself with the best of all possible intentions is it's just not a terribly conducive environment in which to foster health.
No, that's true. Yeah, I mean,
you know, it would be like pouring alcohol on a budding flower. It may not be enough to stop it from doing what it wants to do, which is to grow and to blossom, but it's not going to help. And there's a sort of a common sense here. I know it's not a technique, but there's a sort of a common sense thing that when you can see that the fear thing's not helping, it's not actually keeping anyone safe, it's not actually doing anything, then it's not that the fear will necessarily disappear immediately. It's just you won't take it quite so seriously. You won't think, oh my gosh, I don't want to be scared, but maybe I should be scared. Maybe I'm not scared enough, because if I was scared enough, then... And that's what we all get into in our heads, and we wind ourselves up about it.
Yeah, I think that's what I want to be, and not to take it so seriously. I had a moment where she was definitely unwinding, so, and I said, well, you know, don't worry, it's going to be okay. In that moment, I felt good that I was comforting her, and I comforted myself out of that situation. So you're right about that. I think the only, you're right. I just
so is there anything your concern might happen if you just relaxed as best you could?
Yeah. Well, I guess when I'm talking, I'm sort of anxious, but because I'm just sort of thinking. I think for me, I guess I feel like I'm a sitting target. If I just sit and be quiet, I feel like whatever the fear is, it's just going to wipe me out, because I'm just sitting there waiting, and it sees me and it can just sort of get me right there. You know, whatever the issue is. So.
Right. And if there and look, if there was really this thing out there. I've got a friend who calls it the psychological boogeyman.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We think that, you know, we talk about fear, we experience fear as if it's something outside us that can do something to us. And when you see, it's just like a shadow. You ever done that? You ever been out at night and you've jumped at your own shadow?
Yeah.
And it is genuinely scary until you realize what it is. And as soon as you realize what it is, you feel a little bit sheepish. You look around to make sure nobody saw you. And then you carry on. Okay, this is the same thing. It's a shadow in our own mind. It's just a thought that we somehow didn't notice was just a thought. And so consequently, it scared us. And when we see it for what it is, which is one of the infinite possibilities that I happen to be entertaining in my mind in that moment, then it just moves on and a new thought takes its place.
Wow.
And that new thought will always be a higher thought. It will always be a more loving thought. It will always be a deeper thought, because it comes not from us trying to think our way out of it. But when we relax, when we slow down in our heads, that opens up that space for the natural movement towards health and well-being.
And you know, I agree with you. I think that what happens is I get like this when I just don't think about those thoughts. I mean, think about that process of what you just said. I just go somewhere else. And that's what I was calling today, to find out what you do or what you use to sort of use daily, because I don't do anything daily but live in fear. So I want to.
Right. So okay, that might not be like a great strategy. But here's I've got a friend, and he was taking somebody out to teach, and they were teaching for the first time. They were teaching a sort of therapeutic process for the first time. And the woman said to him the morning of her presentation at breakfast, she said, "You know, I got to admit, I'm really kind of scared." And he said, "Oh, yeah." He said, "I get scared sometimes." And she said, "Well, what do you do about it?" And he said, "Oh, you don't want to do anything about it." And the reason is that it would be like watching a scary movie and trying to change the movie. Like if you were watching a movie of a mother and son, and the son was scared, and you went up to the screen and started trying to get the son not to be scared, it wouldn't work with the best will in the world, because it's not really happening.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing. When you can see, even if you only just get a glimpse, that all this kind of fear, it's just your own thoughts spinning, and it's completely innocent. But if you let it, if you let yourself relax, if you let it, it will just pass. And the next moment, you won't be scared. And then maybe 5 minutes later, you'll get scared again. And then you go, "Oh, God, I'm there goes Jamel thinking again." And you'll let it go. And it'll pass. And what you'll find is that when it passes, you don't just get back to not scared. You actually start to get back to a place of real well-being.
Yeah, you're right.
So here's let me give you one more analogy, and then I'm just going to leave you to it, because I know that you will get through it, and all I want for you is for you not to worry about it so much along the way.
Okay.
So one of the metaphors I've been teaching in London for the past 4 days, and one of the metaphors that came up a lot is that lightning and thunder and rain are really kind of scary unless you're the sky. See, if you're the person being rained on, well, that can be a little daunting. But if you're the sky within which the weather happens, then it doesn't matter quite so much whether it's sunny or raining. And you are, your mind is, your being, your true self is the sky.
Okay.
And fear is just some weather that comes through from time to time. And you wouldn't work too hard to try and get the weather to change, that you might bring an umbrella. Okay. Complete for now?
Yeah, it helps. It helps. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jamel.
All right. Thank you.
And you know, look, it's the same for all of us. We get caught up. And if we kind of know that that's what's happening, that's no big deal, and we can relax again, and those thoughts will move on, and higher thoughts will come in. But it's when we think we've got to fix it, that actually makes it bigger and bigger and bigger, because each thought that you hold in your consciousness starts to create your experience. And the longer you hold it there, and the more of a big deal you make out of it, the more that becomes your experience of life. Let's go to Texas. Let's speak with Debbie. Debbie, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi. I'm currently unemployed, and my last job, I feel and pick up on things, and I don't like to, but it always seems like when I do, I can't get it out of my head. And so at work, I feel fear of failure, and I don't like conflict, and sometimes I feel like, you know, I can read people, and then it enables me from working if it's directed towards me.
So, and tell me if I'm, it sounds to me, and tell me if I'm missing a more specific question, that your concern is that if you go back into the workplace with your head where it is, it's not going to go so well.
Right.
Okay. So here's what I know. I don't know if you ever heard me use this analogy, but from time to time, I use the analogy of a sports car for the workings of the mind. And it, you know, in a sports car, it's got this thing, it's called a tachometer, the RPM gauge, and it shows you how fast the engine is revving.
Yeah.
And, you know, you step on the gas and you always see them kneel, move over to the right. Uh-huh. Well, in our brains, instead of being measured in revolutions per minute, it's almost like our mental tachometer measures things in thoughts per minute. And I'm making these numbers up just to be really clear about that. But like, so 0 to 50 TPM thoughts per minute, our brain is optimal functioning, and we will feel kind of wonderful and peaceful. And, you know, there'll be a few thoughts that float through our head. 50 to 100 is like healthy functioning. We'll have good feelings. We'll be able to interact pretty easily and handle whatever comes up to the best of our abilities pretty easily. It starts going 100 to 200 and we begin to overload. We're in kind of mild stress now and we're still okay. You know, we really are fine, but, you know, it wouldn't take a lot to begin to push us. But then it starts going more. It starts going faster. We get 200 to 300 and it, now we're spinning out of control. Now we're not just like a little stressed in this moment. We're stressed a lot of the time and we begin to be kind of short with people and we begin to really question our own abilities and question our capacity to cope with saying, and then if it starts going over 300, we burn out. We're in extreme stress, right? You've got an experience of that, whatever your experience of that is, right?
Yes.
So what, rather than go into each one of those things that you were saying and try and go, well, okay, let's work out that one, then let's work out that one, then let's work out that one, then let's work out that one. They feel like a big deal, and it feels like you don't know what to do about them because they're spinning so fast right now. Now, if I want to slow down, if you were driving a big racing car and you wanted to move the needle to the left to slow down the revs on the car, on the engine, how would you do it?
If I was to slow down, just put my brake.
Well, if you were to slow down the car, you'd put your brake on. But if you just wanted to slow down the engine...
Oh, take the gas off.
That's right.
Take my foot off the pedal.
You take your foot off the pedal. And that's really all you got to do with your mind, Debbie. And that's what I mean when I say the ultimate psychotherapy, in a way, is just to relax. Because when you do, you start to get insights.
Uh-huh.
You start to get insights into how things work. Here's another metaphor for it. Imagine a swimming pool, okay? And this swimming pool, I'm going to write the answer to each one of your questions at the bottom of the swimming pool in nice big letters. Now, when the pool is still, you're going to be able to read what I wrote, right?
Yeah.
But if there's somebody splashing about in the pool, it's going to be hard to read what's written at the bottom. The thing is that the nature of the pool is still. So the second the swimmer leaves the pool's going to return right to its natural state of calm and you're going to be able to read the wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with this. When you go in there and try and figure it all out and work it all out and fix it, that's like you diving into the pool and splashing about trying to get the swimmer out. When in fact, if you can just be with it for a bit and just relax, maybe even forget about it for a week. What starts to happen is the pool goes back to still. Your mind goes back to its natural resting state. You begin to experience a greater sense of peace and insight starts to come and you kind of start to realize, wow, do you know what? I'm great in this situation and I don't have this problem here. I only have it there. And this kind of work would actually be much more conducive to what I want to do. And the reason I feel so stressed over there is I don't want to be over there.
Right.
And all those answers are inside you right now. And it just may be that you don't have the easy access to them because there's so much splashing going on in your swimming pool.
Yeah.
So would you be willing to just for a bit, just stop splashing about a bit and just see what you can see when it gets back to still? All right, Debbie, you have a wonderful, wonderful time. Feel free to phone back anytime.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay. And the same thing is true for all of us. Just relax and you'll begin to see. We're going to be back with more of your calls and more thoughts on the ultimate psychotherapy right after this break. Bye-bye for now.
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about the ultimate psychotherapy, which is really just to relax a little bit. We're taking your calls. Just before I go back to the calls, I do a real quick. If you like the kind of work that I do with people on the show, you can learn to do it too. And you can do that by going to www.supercoachacademy.com and consider joining us in LA. We have we did the first one in New York this year, and it was phenomenal. And we have teachers both live and virtual, like Jan-La Van Zandt and Robert Holden and George Pransky and Gay and Kathleen Hendricks, and all sorts of just amazing people come together to support you in creating a new career for yourself as a coach. So that's something that's out there. But in the meantime, let's stop talking about it and let's start doing it. Let's go to Alberta and let us go to Cheryl. Cheryl, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Oh, I just want you to help calm my nerves and to give me some coaching on to stop my mind chatter, because normally I just deal in the holistic field, and now I have to, they found a lump on my right ovary, and now I have to go in for an operation, and I'm extremely nervous, and so I'm just not even doing the things that I know how to do. I'm just like paralyzed, like so scared of the whole thing that I'm not doing anything, like not stealing myself, just I'm being consumed by my thoughts, which are fearful.
Yeah. Yeah, first off, I'm very sorry to hear that, and you know, best of luck for that, and not best of luck for relaxing and calming your mind. I know you can do that bit, you know, but what is it you do? You say you're in the holistic field.
I do Reiki and cranial psychotherapy and hypnotherapy and stuff, and I'm just not doing any of it. Like, I'm just so numb.
Yeah. Of those things. Now, I don't necessarily know the same amount of each, but I would guess you could probably be numb and still do the Reiki bit.
Yes.
Would that be right?
Yes.
Cause I don't know. I'm thinking, cause I learned Reiki. I forget. I'm a level 3 something. But it was many years since I've used it in any sort of formal sense. But I sort of remember that, you know, even now I'll find myself, just as I lie there not sleeping, when that happens, that I can just put my hands in various places, and it does make a difference.
It does.
It does. So here's the thing. You know that, and well, maybe you don't know. I was going to say, you know that what's going to happen is going to happen. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah, not the deepest thing I've ever said on the show, I know, but sometimes it's worth remembering that. Sometimes we think that we can grow the flower, that we can be the ones to turn the seed into the plant, to turn the acorn into the oak, to heal the cut, when in fact we never could and we never will, because that's not us that does that. I don't. That you can call that God. You can call that the life force. You can call that nature. Whatever it is that does that. You know, I sometimes think of that as mind. That is mind. That's sort of the thing that we've got that connects us. But all we can do is contribute to the ease or difficulty of that naturally occurring process taking place. And I think for me, and you tell me if this you know, because this isn't about me, but I know for me that what makes a real difference is when I remember that I don't control how things turn out. Because when I think I do, I think I've got something that I could get right or could get wrong. And that is scary. It's a scary thought. Crikey, if I don't think the right things, if I don't do this right, it's going to go badly. But if I do it right, if I find the right thing, then it will all go well.
See, that's what I'm caught up in.
Yeah. Well, here's a little fun thing that you might want to do. You might want to go out, get yourself it can be an acorn, it can be a bag of seeds, just something. It's just symbolic. Mm-hmm. And just carry it around with you. And when you hear yourself up in your head trying to do something about it, Just take the take the acorn out, take the bag of seeds out, and start telling it to grow.
Okay.
And you're gonna pretty quickly you're gonna laugh at yourself, even if it's just a little. And you're gonna put it away until the next time you get caught up.
That sounds like an excellent idea.
I well, thank you.
I'm going to do that.
And I think, and Cheryl, know that, you know, my thoughts and prayers will be with you. And I do know that a relaxed body and a relaxed mind are a wonderful environment for the natural healing process to happen.
I know. And I will get there.
Yeah. Yeah, you will. I can hear it. I can hear it. Thanks for letting me be a little part of the journey.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for helping.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Do you know, I mean, it's true. We sometimes forget. We think we're not supposed to be part of life, and we think death isn't supposed to be part of life. I'm not saying she's going to die. I don't mean it like that. You know, I just mean that stuff happens, okay? Life, Sid Banks used to always say, life is a contact sport. And we only kind of have a real problem with it when we think our life should be an exception and that no rain should fall into our life. And we're going to do the best we can with whatever comes our way. And when you relax a little bit more about it, when you take it maybe a little less seriously, not less seriously like you don't do anything about it, less seriously like you don't spend all your time worrying about it, then often something comes up from underneath, a bit of wisdom, a bit of well-being, a bit of humor. And it just makes it easier to bear and easier to see what to do if there is something to do. Let's go to Batavia, Illinois, and let's talk with Kimberly. Kimberly, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Well, I called in because I'm trying to get some new insight. I have a mother who was diagnosed with brain cancer in February, and my sister and I have been sharing her care, and she's at the point where she's done all the treatment that she can, but now it's like we have to make decisions, and they're more like end-of-life decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked at like what I'm incomplete with her, and there really isn't a lot. There's one area that, since she had part of her brain removed, she remembers how we got along as mother-daughter in teenage years, and that was not pretty.
Right.
In fact, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I'm listening.
Okay. And I'm 48, and I, you know, am with her long periods of time, like 4 days, and she reverts back to that. And what I'm looking for is there's this part of me that just wants to rip her head off. It's not very compassionate, but like, want, you know, like, why are you being like that? And then a part of me that says, well, I'm the grown up, right?
Have you ever stopped to answer the question when that perhaps less than fully compassionate part says that, you know, why are you being like this? I don't believe in rhetorical questions. Have you ever stopped to answer the question?
I have asked her.
Not her, because she might not be able to answer that.
I have more recently been looking, because it's a trigger situation, and I know that it's totally past-based conversations that when I'm with her, I'm not really with her because of there's such history.
Yeah. I mean, what if every time you walked, when I first started teaching, I thought the best thing I could do for people, because I'd see them in groups once a month over a period of 6 months or a year. And mm-hmm. and I remember I'd sit down and I'd do these really detailed notes of what had gone on in our time together and what to work on with them when they next came. And I noticed one of my colleagues used to always look at me and he kind of gave me that "you'll learn, son" thing. And I thought I was there, you know, all arrogant, thinking, you know, haha, he's just jaded and I'm going to show him because I'm so committed to my clients. But what he was actually, I came to see, his sort of that, what that look really meant is the person that walks back in the room isn't the person who left unless I create them that way.
Yeah, I can see where that's true.
And it is just, it's again, it's just a human thing. It's just something we all kind of, learn to do is we talk to someone today based on what we made up about them sometime in the past.
Well, I totally get that. And I catch that I have these expectations that my family should be supportive and yada, yada, yada. And I get that it's just yada, yada, yada. Like, there's no truth.
Yeah. So other than the fact that there's no truth to anything that you tell yourself and it makes you feel miserable, what other reasons to give it up can you think of?
Well, she doesn't have that long on earth. And that's the other part of it is, like, I feel like I'm supposed to be perfect, you know. And when I do, I maybe don't hold it together because I...
You know, wouldn't it be lovely, Kimberly, wouldn't it be lovely if you could spend what time you have left together enjoying each other's company as best you can? And having just as much fun together as you can under the circumstances. And that will include from time to time crying. And that may include from time to time a little bit of shouting. But on the whole, what if you could look back on this and you could go, you know, I'm really glad I was there for her. And I don't know how much of it she got, but I'm glad that I did what I did.
Yeah.
Because that's all we can do. That's the bit of life we've got some control over. Mm-hmm. For all the things we can't control, we get to control how we show up and if we show up. And I don't know anyone who really shows up and who really at least does, you know, their best to show up in a good place who regrets what winds up happening. It sometimes turns out the way you want it to. It sometimes doesn't. But there's no regrets.
Right.
And I think more often than not, it's the fear of regretting it later that makes it so unpleasant now.
Yeah, that's probably true. Because, I mean, the difference between being with her now and my father, there wasn't time and I didn't have maturity and I didn't really have the language to be able to act out of a space of being an adult. That was, you know, in my early 30s. So, I mean, there are great things that have come out of this. There's just sometimes it's just like if someone hooked my brain up to wires and it had, you know, bells and whistles, they pretty much could go, you know, take care of half a town. At least it feels that way.
Yeah, and it does, but it takes us back to, were you listening to the show earlier when we were talking about the thoughts per minute and the revs on the...
I've been listening the whole time. I don't find it an accident that I got through.
Yeah.
I listen all the time, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I pick up the phone.
Yeah, so I just think that's, you know, it is, there is a lovely kind of a synchronicity, a serendipity that this is what we're talking about today, because that's really all that needs to change. You ever been on a bus or in your car in the park in a parking lot, and the car next to you starts to move, and for just a minute you get a jolt like you're moving?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a weird perceptual thing. If you ever ride trains, it happens a lot on trains, but it's just this weird sensation when the thing next to you moves. You're still, but it feels like you're moving. And the same thing happens. Our brains spin so fast that it looks like the world's moving really quickly. But when you're allowing that space for your thinking to slow down, the world miraculously slows down to its own speed too, because it never really was going any faster than it goes. And you suddenly find yourself with a lot more spaciousness and a lot more peace. And it's a lot easier from that spaciousness and peace to do whatever there is to do. And there will be things to do and there will be decisions to make. But they're just easier to make when you're not on a hamster wheel.
Yeah, I can see that.
And the hamster wheel, even though it feels like it's life that's the hamster wheel, it's our own thinking that's the hamster wheel. And when that slows down, life's just life. Life's going to do what it does. And we can actually really, really, really enjoy the heck out of it and have some pretty beautiful moments of connection with people when things slow down like that.
Yeah, no, I get that there's truth. That truth leads to beauty and goodness. And I don't necessarily have to say every little comes to my mind.
Yeah. I mean, and goodness me, I mean, I might get better ratings if I said every little thing that came to my mind, but I don't think it would be very nice. You know, it's just, you know, our minds, just stuff comes through, and if you just let it, it goes back out. You know, it's...
Yeah.
There's really not quite as much control needed as people sometimes think.
No, I just have to remember, it's a thought. Just like if a thought, you know, whatever I'm thinking about her is really no different than, gee, I'd like a chocolate bar.
Yeah.
But I give it more meaning.
Yeah, and maybe, you know what, just for today, give the I want a chocolate bar thought a little bit more meaning.
I'm really trying to kick the emotional
well, okay,
stuff.
Well, okay,
okay.
You know, I'm not saying on a regular basis, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I actually, I do some research on this whenever I can, and it said when you crave a specific food, that means that you're not eating for hunger, you're eating for your emotion. So that's why when you said that, I was like, no! I'm not gonna.
do you know what? I'm thinking more in the not trying to be a perfect person kind of that way, but just relax and enjoy your life a little bit more, especially now. Not at the cost. It's not going to be at the cost of the people around you. It's actually going to be part of what allows the beauty and connection to be there. And whether or not her brain is capable of remembering it, yours is.
That's true. Yeah, and I do see the beauty of being with my family. And it is a way to heal some things that I didn't even know were there.
Yeah. All right, so I'll leave the chocolate part to you. I'll have some.
Yes.
And I'll be thinking of you.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kimberly.
It.
You bet.
All right.
I mean, one of the things that really I hope you're hearing as you listen today is life happens. There's a beautiful story. I believe it's a Buddhist story. I first heard it as a story about the Buddha. And a woman comes to the Buddha and her child has died. And she's carrying the child in her arms. And she's heard that the Buddha can do miracles. And that there are even stories that the Buddha has brought the dead back to life. And she, in understandable desperation, brings the child to the Buddha and says, "You must help bring my child back." And he sees her pain and he sees her confusion. And in his compassion, he says, "Bring me a mustard seed from a house that has not tasted death, and I will bring your child back to life." And of course, the woman, in an unbelievably committed, unbelievably focused, unbelievably driven way, goes to every house in every village. And at some point, she realizes there are no houses in any villages that don't at some point taste death. And that's just part of life. And that doesn't mean we love it. That doesn't mean we crave it. That doesn't mean we go chase it. But it also doesn't, it makes it a little bit less personal and a little bit easier to bear. And our choice becomes not how do we prevent the unpreventable, but how do we incorporate it into our wonderful, meaningful lives? Let's go to Philadelphia, and let's talk to Dan in Philadelphia. Dan, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for all the work you have done and are continuing to share your insights as you come upon them. I just wanted to let you know that it's been very helpful in my life, and I just picked up the phone and figured I'd call and thank you listening to the beginning of the show.
All right. Well, you're welcome, and thank you very much for phoning in, Dan. That's wonderful.
Sure. Okay. I really appreciate it, and take good care.
You too. Well, that was nice. There's a story I love about, I can't remember which of the Japanese emperors it was told about. I think I've written about it, and you can have what you want. And his schedule was, all his appointments were 10 minutes long. And all day, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 10 minutes there, 10 minutes there. And you know, the rumor was that if you messed up and if you were 11 minutes or if people were late, it was kind of an off with your head kind of a situation. So his helpers and people ran around like crazy trying to make sure that everything worked to this schedule and everyone could get seen and everything lasted just the right length of time. And one time he went to visit a temple and the emperor arrived and there was no one there to greet him. And his helpers were running around like crazy, and it's not like they had cell phones in those days. They were trying to track down what had gone wrong and where the confusion was, and they're both there sitting, oh gosh, the emperor's going to be so angry. He's going to do bad things to us. It's all going to go terribly wrong. And finally they go, well, okay, but we're going to have to face up to this. This is our job. And they go to see the emperor, and exactly 10 minutes after he's been standing there, he turns to go and he says, thank you. Please book me more appointments like that one. Let's go to Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and let's talk to Marcy. Marcy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you, first of all. Having a relationship that I don't know if it's right for me or not, and I am in circles and circles and circles in my mind trying to figure out what to do about it, and I guess my main concern is that if I wait around longer to see what will unfold from this relationship, that I will hurt the person involved if I decide that it's not going to work.
Well, can you just help me out with something? What is it that you think would let you know whether a relationship was right for you or not? In other words, what's the criteria you'd be using for that?
My main issue with him is, see, this is the thing. Ever since I met him about 9 months ago, he's got a lot of stress in his life. His dad was very sick, stuck in a power chair with muscular sclerosis, and he's taking care of him in the home. His mom has bone cancer. So I know he's depressed and stressed out about his home life. So I was, you know, allowing that to be his excuse in my mind for not showing me very much affection and attention. As it's gone on, I just let it go on. His father passed away a few weeks ago, and now his mother is in the hospital. She broke her hip because she has bone cancer, and I just feel like I don't want to leave him at a point where he's having a lot of problems. But on the other hand, you know, I don't know if it's like my own self-worth manifesting onto this guy.
Marcy, I'm gonna do this. So just you stay with me here, okay?
Okay.
And you know, I can hear the sort of the wind up in your own head as each of these things stacks on top of the one beneath, and it's really difficult. So here's what we're going to do. Okay, you're going to stay on the line after we're done, and you're going to give your details to Joe in the studio, and he's going to send them on to me, and I'm going to send you a couple of books that you can take your time with and look at that'll just help you maybe get some different perspective on what's possible in relationship. Okay? That's the first thing. So nothing deep has to come out of our time together right now. Okay? I'm going to stick with what I've been saying all show. If you're willing to kind of let go of having to figure it out for a bit, it will become apparent to you. And I'm not talking about stringing it along for another year. I'm talking about in just a week or two of relaxing, you'll know what to do. So please stay on the line, okay? Joe's gonna take care of you, and we're gonna get some stuff out to you, okay?
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Marcy. All right. So we are coming to the end of another show. I am not Dr. Richard Bandler, but I hope you enjoyed me anyways. And we will be back with next week. We actually do have a special guest, my friend Paul McKenna. Many of you know from the UK. He's got a new book out in America called I Can Make You Confident. And we'll be talking about the secrets of instant confidence for that show next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.